Welcome to the Trigator Podcast, where budgets are balanced, debt gets destroyed, and alligator expenses get fed before they bite. I am your host, Nate Tanner. The Trigator Podcast is sponsored by Trigator. Go to Trigator.com and sign up for the free trial of the Trigator app to budget by paycheck, build your savings, and knock out debt. With Trigator, you can enjoy life more, worry about money less. Okay, so today I'd like to talk a little bit about retirement. And that's something that we all look forward to and we all hope to achieve a really nice retirement. And more specifically, I want to talk about some of the secrets to retiring early. Because I look at some people that I know, like for example, my father-in-law. He was a farmer for his entire life. And he spent his whole life working and he never was able to retire. And it's quite sad because every day of his life he was working, and it was really, really hard for him to work, especially in his older years. And he never got that opportunity to really experience those, you know, quote unquote golden years where he was able to retire and do the things that he wanted to do. What we want to look at is how we can avoid that, how we can be able to retire at an age that we can still enjoy some time afterwards. Really, retirement is going to take a lot of hard work and it's going to take some sacrifice to be able to do things because it's really right now is the time that you have to work and right now is the time that you have to put money away towards that retirement. And there's a basic idea for when you're able to retire. And it's a very, very simple math equation. The question is, if you stopped working today, how long would your money last? That's the real question to determine if you can retire or not is, if I quit working today, would the money run out before the end of my life, basically? That's the simple equation that we need to solve in order to retire. And the sooner that we can come up with a way to make our funds and our money last for the rest of our lives, the sooner we can retire. And so retirement isn't a magic number of 65 or 67 or 72 or whatever age. It's not a matter of age. It's a matter of that financial equation of how long will your money last if you didn't work. And how you invest and spend your money now is going to determine how and when you are able to retire. There's a lot of different avenues for creating a retirement, and we'll talk about a few of those. But one thing that I want to take just a quick step back on is talk about your spending now, because what you're spending your money on right now is going to affect your ability to retire, because especially if you have debt, and debt is a retirement killer. Okay. If you have a lot of debt, not only is that going to cost you money now, but as you're paying on that debt, it affects your ability to retire later. If you are like my father-in-law who had a lot of debt his whole life, you're never going to be able to retire because you're always going to be owing other people money. And so you've really got to get rid of this debt as fast as you can so that you can then take those funds that you're using to pay someone else to pay yourself and start saving up for that retirement. Now, as I mentioned, it's a simple math equation. If you stop working, how long until your money runs out? And ideally, the answer to that should be never. You should be able to have enough of a nest egg that the money will never run out throughout the rest of your life. And what I want to talk about now are just a couple of different ways that we save for retirement and that we can do things. One of the biggest things that we need to do is diversify. Because if you put all your eggs in one basket, if that basket gets lost, then your retirement is completely gone. And some of the more traditional ways of doing retirement funding are your 401k and your IRA. Now, these vehicles do have, of course, retirement in mind, but they have requirements for the age when you can start taking out of them without penalty. So a 401k and an IRA, you have to reach a certain age before you're able to take out of them. So they're a great retirement vehicle and they're there for you and they have tax savings and different things along those lines. But again, you're really looking at an age where you can't start taking out. So if you want to retire early, you can't have everything put into a 401k or an IRA because you're not going to be able to take out of that money you're not going to be able to take out of that vehicle until you've reached a certain age. So let's talk about a couple of other investments that are out there that you can use to create a retirement nest egg. One of the biggest secrets to retiring early is generating what's called passive income, okay? And passive income is money that you're not working for. It's money that you've invested and you're getting paid based on those investments. And one of the most common vehicles used for passive income is real estate. And what that creates with real estate investment is let's say you purchase a property and you rent it out, every month you're going to be receiving rent checks for that without you having to work. And especially if you have a property management company taking care of it for you, then the property management takes care of it and you just get mailbox money and you have this income that's just coming in. Okay. You also can create passive income through things like mutual funds, where you can get return on investment. And if you invest into just specifically into mutual funds outside of an IRA or a 401k, then you're not limited on when you can take out of that vehicle. Okay. You can take out of a mutual fund whenever you want. Now, there are tax implications for that. You're going to pay capital gains taxes on that money that you realize for those gains, but that's all part of what you need to plan for as well when you're dealing with working towards your retirement goals. You also have different vehicles such as those precious metals and cryptocurrency that can be used to diversify and create additional income as they're going on. But I wanted to step back again about this passive income, because that is really the key to retiring early, as I mentioned before. And you want to invest your money in such a way that you're getting a regular return on it, a regular paycheck, if you will, that's coming in from that investment. Okay. And that's how you're going to be able to retire early, is if you have that money coming in from investment on top of whatever other work you're doing right now. And the sooner that your passive income number, meaning the money that's coming in without you having to work, as soon as that exceeds the expenses that you have, at that point you can retire, because you'll then be having money coming in that will be beyond what you're paying out. So think about, as you're looking at your investments and looking at how you want to grow your personal finance, think about 401ks and IRAs for long term, because those are very important and those are great vehicles, as again, they do have those age limitations. But also, as you're looking at investments, think about that idea of passive income, because as soon as passive income is greater than expenses, you're able to retire. Okay, let's hop over to some questions now. The first question is from Faye. She says, a down payment was made by my daughter on her ex-boyfriend's home. Can she get that money back? Well, if she is part of the title of that property, then at the time that the property is sold, she would get whatever portion of the property she owns. So if she has 50% of that property, she would get 50% of whatever the proceeds of that sale. So it would come down to when that property is sold that she'd be able to get that back in terms of legally, if she's on title. Now, if she's not on title and she was just gifted that money to the ex-boyfriend, then you're in a much more difficult situation as far as getting that money back, because there's not a legal requirement that he would have to give that to her if that money was gifted and is not part of any terms within that purchase contract for the home. So the short answer is there's not a way to get the money back unless she's on title. If she's on title, then when that property is sold, then she can get the money back, or she can be bought out of her interest in the property. So it's a tough situation, especially since it's an ex. But if it was just a gift and was given just because, then unfortunately, there's not a legal way that she can get that money back. You can consult with a lawyer, of course, and you may want to do that to see if there is any legal means. But it sounds like, based on the information you gave here, unless she's on title, there's that money's going to be gone. So, Faye, I wish I had some better news for you, but check to see if she's on title, check with an attorney, and see if there's any options or avenues there. Our next question is from Ron. Ron says, what should you prepare when buying a house besides the money? Well, there's a lot of things that you need to do as you're purchasing a home, especially if it's a primary residence for yourself. There is you bring up the obvious one of the money that's involved, such as your down payment and the different closing costs and different things like that that are there. But prior to purchasing that home, you do want to get, of course, an inspection done of the home where you have someone come in and test for mold, test for radon, test for any other issues there. They're going to need to check the roof and the HVAC system and all of these other different things. I'm not an inspector, so I can't tell you everything that's going to be checked, but you want to hire a licensed inspector to come in and check that home for anything that may be wrong with it or that may be going out. You know, they'll check the water heater. They'll check all sorts of different things in there to make sure all the systems are working and where they need to be. And the better the inspection, the better peace of mind you have that the home you're purchasing is a good home and in good repair. You're also going to need to get an appraisal, and your lender is going to take care of that. They're going to order the appraisal, and it's going to come back and basically say how much the home is worth. And at that point, there may need to be some renegotiation of the contract. For example, if it comes back at lower than the original contract price, there may need to be negotiation as far as a reduction of price to match that appraisal, or you may have to come up with some additional money to fulfill the gap of the appraisal and the purchase price. So that's another step that will happen as far as things go. Also, on your personal finances, what you need to prepare for is that you're going to see an increase in some of the things that you have. For example, if you're in an apartment right now, you're going to see an increase in your utilities. Homes do cost more in terms of utilities for power, water, garbage, all of those different things. And so be prepared in your personal finances for your expenses to go up. You're also going to want to look at some of these alligator expenses that we've talked about, such as replacing the air filters in your HVAC system. You're going to have yard maintenance for the home. You're going to have minor repairs around the home that you're going to have to pay for. So be ready with your personal finance so that those things don't jump up and bite you and come up with unexpected expenses. So several things that you need to prepare for and be ready when you're purchasing that home, especially if it's your first home. So great question, Ron. Best of luck to you as you're purchasing a home. And our third question comes from Anna. She says, we live with my in-laws. They pay the mortgage and my husband and I pay all other taxes and bills. My mother-in-law just told us she wants us to pay half the mortgage as well, but won't add our names to the house. How do I say no in a polite way? Well, the polite way to say no is to say no. But you raise an interesting question where what you're essentially entering into is a tenant landlord agreement as far as things go. If they don't want to put you on the title of the house and give you an interest in the house for paying that, then they're essentially becoming your landlord and wanting you to pay rent. And that's an agreement and an arrangement that you need to make with them so that you can iron out all the terms of saying, okay, if we're going to pay you so much in rent, then you need to fulfill certain things for us. We need to have, access to the property, of course, and have a place to live. But what about things like maintenance and things along those lines of what they're going to do to maintain the property? So it's going to be a longer discussion, especially if you're going to be in that tenant landlord relationship, to kind of work things out, because it is their property and they do have the ability to charge you rent if that's what they want to do. And, they don't necessarily have to put you on the title for that because they're the landlord. They're going to be doing with the rent money as they wish. And if they use it to put it towards the mortgage, that's their choice, or they could use it to save up or do whatever they want. It's their home. It's their asset. And so, if they won't put you on the title and give you an interest in the property, then you need to iron out what specifically that looks like in terms of a landlord and tenant relationship and what sort of a lease agreement you can come up with for that home. So the politest way to say no is that you're going to say, I'm sorry, we're not able to do that. And then they're you're probably gonna have a discussion about possibly needing another place to live, because if they need you to start paying rent, then you may end up in a situation where you're going to need to find someplace else to live, because it is their home and it is their prerogative on that. So again, you can say no, but it sounds like they really want you to enter into that landlord-tenant relationship, which it's hard, especially with family, because family, you want to do nice things, you want to be kind, and you want to take care of each other. But there is a financial aspect, and whenever finances enter into relationships, it can make things difficult. And you really need to work very, very carefully together so that you don't damage the relationship as you work through, because the in-laws may have their own view of things and think that you need to pay rent and that that's part of what you need to do if you're going to live there. And so there's two sides to it, and just be sure that you're aware of their side of the story, and that you can come to the table with and come to an agreement together. So that's going to be the big thing, is coming up with that win-win that you're able to reach, hopefully. If you do have a question that you'd like to submit, please feel free to do so. You can email us at podcast@Tregator.com. You can also post your questions on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Tregator. And you can also visit our website at Tregator.com/podcast and enter your questions there. While you're out on the social media realm, go ahead and be sure that you like us on the Facebook page, and that you follow us on Instagram and Twitter. It's at Tregator. And that you subscribe to this podcast so that you never miss an episode. We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Tregator Podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Tregator. Go to Tregator.com and sign up for your free trial of the Tregator app to budget by paycheck, build your savings, and knock out debt. With Tregator, you can enjoy life more, worry about money less. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.